Hello, this is Mary, and I'm reading selections from the Pantograph from Monday, August 3rd, 2026. From the front page of the paper, Wheels Rolling for Good Cause, School Supply Drive Helps Skaters Circle Back to Bloomington, by D. Jack Alkery. Bloomington. 4-year-old August Lello held on to his mother's hand Saturday afternoon as he cautiously skated around Grossinger Motors Arena. It was his second time ever putting on skates. "It's really scary because I'm kind of a doomsdayer," said his mother, Sarah Lello. They were sitting on a bench taking a break when she smiled and reached over to touch his blonde head. "I think about him falling and hitting his head or something," she said. "But even from the first time to the second time, watching him, just their growth. Kids are so resilient, and they pick up stuff so fast." The Lellos were just one of dozens of families who joined the first ever back-to-school skate, hosted by new Bloomington-based skating pop-up group Wheels Entertainment. Organizers also collected school supplies for two local nonprofits. "We're going to divide those between Western Avenue Community Center and the Boys and Girls Club and just split them equal down the middle," said Wheels founder Mindy Crow. "We're just hoping we can fill the gaps for kids from those two places." Crow started Wheels earlier this year because she was tired of going outside the Twin Cities to skate, following the closure of Bloomington Normal's final skating rink, Skate in Place, by April 2023, she said. "I was always having to travel to skate. And I'm like, man, I've got to drive 45 minutes. I have to drive an hour, hour and a half, or whatever, just to meet up with people." Then inspiration hit earlier this year. "I saw an ad for roller derby at the Interstate Center, and it all just clicked. I'm like, if they are there for it there, we can do it there." And that's just when Wheels started, Crow said. That roller derby team, the Prairie Land Punishers, will host its next home bout at 5 p.m. October 3rd, back at the Interstate Center in Bloomington. Starting in May, Wheels has hosted an adult skate once a month, Crow said, with most folks bringing their own skates or renting one of the 3 dozen pairs she owns. Then, Mike Wilcott, Assistant Director of Arts and Entertainment for Bloomington, reached out about a back-to-school skate at the arena, she said. "I was like, I need bigger fleet. So I reached out to Skate Time School Programs. They travel around to schools and they do the skating in the gyms for them," she said. Skate Time agreed to loan Wheels more than 100 pairs of skates for the summer, but she has to return them at the end of the month, Crow said. "We'll either come up with another rental agreement, or I'll be looking to purchase up to probably 120 more pairs of skates, because that's what we need when we get a full-capacity crowd," she said. "There is no lack of enthusiasm for chances to skate in the Twin Cities," says Rayanne Dunn. "I grew up with my roller skates on every single day. If I wasn't at school, my skates were on my feet. When I heard about that Crow had this great idea for the back-to-school skate, I wanted to support her as much as I could." And the charitable aspect of donating school supplies serves as a good teaching opportunity for their young children, Lello said. "I just think it's really important for them to understand that not everybody can do that," she said. "It just gives them a little bit of gratitude and a little bit of humility and grounding." For more information about the next skating event with Wheels, visit whelzentertainment.com or search for Wheels Entertainment Center on Facebook. There were many, many pictures involved in this particular story. One is 4-year-old August Lello posing with Abe the Bison, mascot for the Bloomington Bison, Saturday during the back-to-school skate hosted by Wheels at Grossinger. Then some pictures of skaters as they were zipping around the arena. And, Yashira Maldonado skating with a 2-year-old Millie Davis at the event. Cora Torres wearing all of her pink safety gear as she skated at the event at the Grossinger Motors Arena. Also from the front page, Aid Opens to People Taken Off a Snap by Ben Zelinsky, Capital News, Illinois. A new state program took effect Saturday to provide food benefits to people who have recently become ineligible because of federal changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. The Families Receiving Emergency Support for Hunger, or FRESH, program kicked off August 1st after state lawmakers appropriated $70 million in the fiscal year 2027 budget to establish a state food assistance program. The initiative allows households that lost their SNAP benefits earlier this year to receive a $400 one-time payment. At a time when the cost of groceries and utilities are all rising, Donald Trump and Republicans decided to strip food assistance from nearly 100,000 people, Governor J.B. Pritzker said in a statement. In Illinois, we passed the FRESH program to help provide some relief for families kicked off food assistance, but no state can backfill the cruel and imminent cuts set in motion by Trump's budget bill. About 150,000 Illinoisans were expected to lose food assistance benefits beginning May 1 after new work requirements established by Congress went into effect. About 1.5 million Illinoisans received SNAP benefits in June, according to the Illinois Department of Human Services. That includes 830,342 households. The number of beneficiaries in June was down to 134,734 people compared to April. Eligible households are those that lost benefits because of the federal changes and are automatically enrolled in the FRESH program. Recipients will receive the one-time payment to their Illinois Link card to use on food. People who lose SNAP coverage in the coming months will also receive payments until funding for the program runs out. The budget also included $55 million to hire 450 Department of Human Services employees, including staff to update state systems to comply with federal changes to SNAP and Medicaid eligibility. Illinois and most other states are to be on the hook for higher costs in the coming years because of the changes Congress made. Beginning in October 2027, states will cover over half of administrative costs for the program, and many states will begin covering a portion of SNAP benefits. States with an error rate of greater than 10% will have to cover 15% of the cost of benefits, starting in fiscal year 2029. Illinois' error rate was 14.7% in federal fiscal year 2025, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That was up from 11.6% the year before. Illinois will have another year to produce a lower error rate, giving the state more time to rectify problems. As of now, the state could be on the hook for $700 million in new SNAP costs by the end of 2028, if nothing changes. Turning to page 2 of the Monday, August 3rd edition of the Pantograph. Today's Flick Fact. Today's question. Across America, these first 2 weeks of August are generally the hottest of the year. But in central Illinois, it's usually instead the third and fourth weeks of July. Do you know why this disparity? Today's answer. Climatologists say it's because the area's lush green growth in July, corn and beans, by August absorbs more of the sun's rays and keeps the ground cooler than elsewhere. Humidity, nonetheless, remains high because of the so-called corn sweat moisture that passes into the air. How time flies. August 3rd. 100 years ago, August 3, 1926. Excavation commenced yesterday for the new foundation for the residence at the northwest corner of Grove and Prairie Street, erected by the late Judge Colliston D. Myers, and which is to be moved to the southwest corner of Olive and Albert Streets to make room for the new garage and sales agency of the Wells Mott Company. 75 years ago, August 3, 1951, a bingo game reportedly in operation at the Normal Tomato Festival was ordered closed by State's Attorney Clifford N. Coolidge, following a complaint by the Reverend Louis L. Miller of Normal and the Reverend Earl H. King of Shenoa that gambling was going on. 50 years ago, August 3, 1976, a removal sale at Chad Band's Jewelers, 309 North Main, will mark the closing of another downtown Bloomington business. Chad Band's dates back to 1892 and is the oldest jewelry store in Bloomington, James B. Anderson, president of the firm, said. 25 years ago, August 3, 2001, the theme of the McLean County Property Committee meeting could have been so much to do and so little money to do it with. The committee heard a plea for improvements to the county-owned McLean County Museum of History, which needs both tuck pointing and repair to its leaking dome. Though the committee took no action on any improvements, it directed County Administrator John Zunick to do research that might lead to eventual action. Also on page 2, Janulius to Run for Chicago Mayor, by Jake Sheridan, Chicago Tribune. Illinois Secretary of State Alexei Janulius announced Sunday he will run for mayor of Chicago, ending over a year of speculation and making official his front-runner status in the already crowded field. Janulius entered the race buoyed by high name recognition, support from trades unions, and a towering lead in campaign cash. He announced his campaign in a news release ahead of a rally at the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 134, headquarters in Bronzeville, where he is expected to be joined by a cadre of supporters from the city council and the business community. The hard-working people of Chicago deserve a government that works just as hard as they do, Janulius said in a statement. Chicagoans don't expect perfection, but they do expect leadership that listens, that rolls up its sleeves to work hard, and that loves the city as much as they do. Leadership that has solved problems and will continue to solve problems. The announcement follows months of the will-he-won't-he game over Janulius' candidacy, speculation fueled by the massive $22 million stockpile in his campaign account. His entry sets up the biggest foil yet to incumbent Mayor Brandon Johnson, who has not declared a re-election bid, but has been attacking a top Janulius donor, asset manager and close Rahm Emanuel ally Michael Sachs, for undermining his progressive agenda. The choice to launch his campaign from a union headquarters on the south side was also a sign Janulius hopes to make inroads where it hurts with supporters of Johnson, who bills himself as Chicago's most pro-labor mayor. But Janulius' staggering amount of cash on hand, more than triple all the other candidates combined, could allow opponents like the mayor to attack him from the left as too cozy with powerful trade unions and elites such as Michael Sachs. Janulius' campaign money is technically earmarked for his ongoing statewide reelection campaign, but is far more than he needs after an uncontested Democratic primary amid a low key general election contest. Last month, Janulius plugged ahead with a mayoral shadow campaign when he launched a series of TV ads for his ongoing Secretary of State run. But with Sunday's decision, the shadows are gone. His decision comes just 4 years after Janulius achieved a long-awaited political comeback to succeed Secretary of State Jesse White. buoyed by close ally Barack Obama, then a U.S. senator and fellow pickup basketball player. Junilius won the election in 2006 as Illinois treasurer. But the once ascendant politician's future quickly unraveled with the next attempted step up. Junilius won the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate in 2010, only to be embroiled in controversy as his family's $1.1 billion Broadway bank collapsed. Reporting during the general election campaign revealed the bank lent $20 million to a pair of Chicago crime figures when Junilius was senior loan officer. Federal regulators seized the bank that April as it struggled with toxic loans. The Democrat went on to narrowly lose the election to Republican Mark Kirk, the last time a GOP candidate won a Senate seat in Illinois. Junilius only recently moved his campaign's impressive war chest from Spring Bank, a New York City-based bank controlled by his family, to Chicago-based Byline Bank, according to campaign finance records filed in late June. He pledged as a Secretary of State candidate to modernize the office as he beat Chicago clerk Anna Valencia and later Republican Dan Brady. In addition to Broadway Bank criticism, detractors argued he made missteps as treasurer that wiped out over $150 million for investors in the state's Bright Start college savings program. As Secretary of State, Junilius launched a skip-the-line appointment system for people updating their driver's licenses and seeking other services, added self-serve kiosks throughout the state, and recently ended mandatory road tests for drivers ages 79 to 86. He has also leaned into national political issues. He spearheaded the 2023 passage of legislation, making Illinois the first state to outlaw book bans, and sent a cease and desist letter to the federal government in December to prevent immigration agents from swapping license plates. Johnson has repeatedly avoided saying whether he will run, leaving open in the possibility that the progressive incumbent, widely expected to enter the race, might not seek re-election. The crowded fields of candidates includes Matthew Brewer, the former Chicago Housing Authority board chair, George Cardenas, Cook County Board of Review commissioner, entrepreneur Joe Hoberg, lobbyist John Kelly, Illinois Comptroller Susanna Mendoza, cardiologist and medical whistleblower Dr. Lisa Nee, U.S. Representative Mike Quigley, and entrepreneur Liam Stanton, businessman Willie Wilson, and Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas have also strongly hinted that they will run. Turning to Section B, the sports page for August 3rd. Chicago Bears defense steals the show. Bears struggle through training camp in the rain. By Sean Hammond, Chicago Tribune. It was a soggy day at Chicago Bears training camp. The Bears canceled fan attendance at Halas Hall because of lightning. Their team began the morning outdoors, but moved outside for the majority of practice. Coach Ben Johnson notably didn't allow his team to use sideline heaters during practices in December and January, so it's probably no surprise he was unbothered by the rain. The wet conditions led to some struggles in the passing game. Footballs slipped through hands with regularity. "We all played in rain before," rookie receiver Xavion Thomas said. "You got to catch the ball and make plays." But the wet conditions were no excuse, and rain or no rain, it was clear the defense got the better of the offense. Defense had its day. The practice was not in full pads, so the physicality was limited, and the focus was mostly on the passing game. Through the first three practices of camp, the ball had not hit the ground often with Caleb Williams and the first-team offense. That was not the case Saturday. In a two-minute drill at the end of practice, Williams threw three straight incompletions, all targeting receiver Luther Burden III. Two were off the mark, and one slipped through Burden's hands. It was an end-of-half situation, not end-of-game, so the possession would have ended with a punt. In another team session, safety Kobe Bryant picked off Williams on a pass up the middle intended for Maurice Alexander. Cornerback Jalen Johnson panicked initially because he didn't think anybody was there to make a play, but then Bryant flew in to make a diving catch. I just like that things are confident. Guys, when they are confident when they see something, they make it happen instead of, "Oh, I thought about it," Jalen Johnson said. No, Bryant went, read the pro quarterback, made a good play, and he wasn't even supposed to be there for it. There's plenty of focus on Williams and the offense, as always, but the Bears defense knows it needs to be better in a lot of areas in 2026. There's a lot for us to prove on defense, Jalen Johnson said. Of course the offense is rolling, but that's not something we can rely on. Okay, the offense to go put up 40 points, and we'll hold them to 35. To me, that's unacceptable. We've still got a lot to work on. We've got a lot to do and a lot to prove. Some baseball trades of note. Blue Jays acquire struggling Talon from Cubs. The Toronto Blue Jays obtained veteran right-hander Jameson Talon from the Chicago Cubs on Sunday for a player to be named or cash considerations. Talon was designated for assignment by the Cubs. He was 2-6 with a career-worst 5.92 ERA through 15 starts and served up 25 home runs, which tied for fourth in the majors, entering Sunday. Talon, 34, is in the final season of a 4-year, $68 million contract. Talon's parents are Canadian, and he has twice represented Team Canada in the World Baseball Classic. And the White Sox have acquired a veteran pitcher. The Chicago White Sox will look to lean on Luis Castillo's vast experience after acquiring the right-hander in a trade with the Seattle Mariners. His reputation within the league is excellent, Sox general manager Chris Getz said. The leadership qualities, the type of teammate that he is, his work ethic, someone that is not going to be scared and is a fearless competitor. Really excited about Castillo, a guy who has had a lot of success in this league for a long time, Sox manager Will Venable said. Castillo, 39, is 3-9 with a 5.06 ERA in 20 outings, 17 starts this season. He had 86 strikeouts and 32 walks in 99 and two-thirds innings. He has playoff experience, posting a 2.25 ERA in 6 career postseason games, 5 starts, and earned All-Star honors in 2019, 2022, and 2023. He finished 5th in the American Cy Young Award voting in 2023. Turning to the national and world news, the Digest. Death toll at least 72 in Morocco migrant rush. Ceuta, Spain. The death toll from a mass rush of migrants from Morocco into the Spanish enclave of Ceuta reached at least 72 on Sunday as 5 more bodies were found along the North African coast, officials said. The number of fatalities was considerably higher than what was announced Sunday by Moroccan authorities. More than 50,000 people crossed into Ceuta by land and sea in an unprecedented surge that began Thursday at one of the European Union's only 2 land borders with Africa, prompting alarm across the bloc. More than 48,000 returned to Morocco within 48 hours, and more did so over the weekend, Spanish authorities said. The Spanish government representative in Ceuta, Miguel Angel Perez, told reporters Sunday that in addition to 72 fatalities, more than 1,000 people were treated by health officials. 3 killed, 21 hurt in Moscow bombing. Moscow. A homemade bomb carried by a woman killed at least 3 people and injured 21 at an upscale restaurant in central Moscow on Saturday evening, authorities said, amid unconfirmed speculation on social media that the attack may have been linked to the war in Ukraine. The explosion occurred just before the 8 p.m. close to an Italian restaurant located in one of Moscow's seven Stala-era skyscrapers, the police said. Russia's National Anti-Terrorism Committee said an unidentified woman carrying an improvised explosive device tried to get into the ballsy Rossi Italian restaurant, but was stopped by a security guard who died in the blaze. Indonesia. At least 5 people were killed and 41 were missing Sunday after a ferry caught fire off Indonesia's Madura Island, the country's search and rescue agency said in a statement. The ferry was carrying 271 passengers and crew members, 225 of whom were rescues, agency data said. Spokane. 3 major wildfires burning near Spokane, Washington, caused authorities to declare a state of emergency Sunday and forced thousands of people to evacuate. The Old Trails, Fairview, and Autumn Lane fires have scorched over 7,700 acres with 0% containment on Sunday, a spokesman said. Idaho. The man who fatally shot 3 people and injured more than half a dozen others this weekend in a Twin Falls, Idaho shopping area died from a self-inflicted gunshot wound, Twin Falls Police Chief Matthew Hicks said Sunday. He said the 24-year-old suspect, identified as Chad Williams, acted alone. Canada. Flight attendants at Canada's WestJet went on strike Sunday after talks fell through with the country's second-largest carrier, grounding flights and adding to challenges by cabin crews across North America to the industry's pay structure. 2 killed when helicopters collide. Record-breaking heat waves, little rain, spell disaster for the EU. From Reuters. Agios Konstantinos, Greece. 2 firefighting helicopters collided in Greece while helping to control a huge wildfire that has destroyed more than 100 homes northwest of Athens, while people fled another blaze on the tourist island of Kefalonia. 2 people in 1 helicopter, a Greek and a Danish national, died, while the crew in the other, 1 person from Greece, 1 from Britain, survived, the fire service said. Investigations started into what caused the collision. Europe has been ravaged by wildfires this summer after a period of record-breaking heat waves and little rain, conditions that scientists say have been exacerbated by climate change. Destructive blazes in France and Spain showed some signs of easing over the weekend, but several wildfires broke out in Greece after a period of relative calm there. Investigations suggested the fire that started in the Greek region of Boeotia before spreading to Attica were caused by sparks from conductors on a private network transmitting electricity generated by wind turbines to the main power grid. 2 Greek nationals were arrested on suspicion of negligence, while another suspect remains at large. Gale-forced winds that fueled a fire on the Gulf of Corinth, 40 miles northwest of Athens, subsided, but flames crossed a mountain to the south and reached the settlement of Venzia and a military firing range, igniting unexploded ordnance. A new fire also broke out alongside a highway near the historic southern city of Carcassonne, apparently caused by a blazing vehicle. Video showed huge plumes of billowing gray smoke and flames near the road. Authorities said they had closed the highway and evacuated a nearby animal park. Other European countries are struggling, including receding water levels in major rivers, including the Rhine and the Danube, which recorded their lowest ever water levels in Hungary, Serbia, and Romania. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph. Please stay tuned.